On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Here's a question. How do we know when the healthcare crisis of spiraling costs and millions of uninsured is really coming to the crunch? Well, maybe when it's getting so bad that our leaders are starting to do something about it. More than a decade after the failed Clinton initiative threw healthcare reform into the deep freeze, new reform moves are busting out all over. The states are diving in, from Massachusetts and Pennsylvania to Arnold Schwarzenegger's California. And this week, the president is calling for taxing some employee health benefits to help other Americans get coverage.
When it comes to healthcare, government has an obligation to care for the elderly, the disabled, and poor children, and we will meet those responsibilities. For all other Americans, private health insurance is the best way to meet their needs. But many Americans cannot afford a health insurance policy.
So is this the way or a shell game? Up next on Point, the new push on health care and what it means for you. We will hear from movers and shakers across the country in this hour, from a top White House architect to California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's health insurance maven. But first, return for some clear explanations for us regular folks to Marilyn Werber-Serafini. She covers health for the National Journal and joins us from Washington. Marilyn, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. My pleasure.
I wish you'd just begin by marching us through what's been put on the table and what is underway in the last few months, starting with this week and the president. Exactly what is President Bush prescribing here?
Okay. Let me just give you take one quick step very quickly back here just to give you some ideas to how we got here. At this point, we've got 47 million uninsured people, and that number is growing every year. We've got healthcare costs that are growing at what just about everyone would agree at alarming rates. As you mentioned before, we had the last time that Congress tried to deal with this situation was with the Clintons in the early 90s,
right.
And that went down in flames to the point where most people believe that that's why Democrats lost both the House and Senate in 1994. Since then, politicians have been very shy about doing almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
They have been able to pass a program for children called the State Children's Health Insurance Program. So where does that leave states? States have said, okay, it doesn't look like the federal government's going to be doing anything anytime soon, so we need to step in and do something.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we've got about 12 states that have stepped forward with plans. Some of them are moving forward aggressively. Others are just thinking about what to do. And in the meantime, Washington is watching. And that's sort of how we ended up with the Bush plan. The folks in the administration have been trying to figure out what to do. And they watched as last year Massachusetts came into its own. Massachusetts was the first major health care plan. They actually, their legislature worked with, the Democratic legislature worked with the governor to actually pass a major health reform effort.
Republican Mitt Romney, now a likely candidate for the Republican presidential nomination. Give us the bones
exactly.
of that plan. What does it do?
Well, the Massachusetts plan would require every individual in Massachusetts to buy health insurance. So right off the bat, you're getting into one of the major problems in that if you don't have people, if you have people who are uninsured, they're going to be using the emergency room. They're not going to be getting care. It's a very expensive way to have a healthcare system.
But it requires everyone to do it, take some of that money to help them do it, what puts a fee on employers, a modest fee for them to chip in
exactly.
as well.
So exactly.
Is it working? Is Massachusetts headed really toward universal coverage then? Does it have it?
Well, it's not up and running, but in theory, it is supposed to work. And one of the things that Massachusetts did was they really brought all of the players to the table. They brought the consumer groups. They brought the businesses. They brought the hospitals. So everyone is pitching in some way. Everybody's got some kind of cut or some kind of mandate, some kind of requirement. And
what about Schwarzenegger and California, Marilyn? What's he got going on here?
It's actually a fairly similar approach. They also Schwarzenegger would also require individuals to buy insurance. He also has a requirement on employers to sort of, they call it player pay. Either you offer some kind of insurance or you pay into a system. One thing that Schwarzenegger would do that Massachusetts did not do is that he would tax doctors and hospitals, and that's raising some concern, as are the employer requirements in the plan. And Massachusetts also, it doesn't exactly tax the doctors and hospitals, but it does take away some of the federal subsidies that they're currently getting for the uncompensated care they provide. When people come in, they can't pay for their care, then the federal government provides a subsidy.
Moves in Pennsylvania as well. I want to get to President Bush and what he's proposed this week. Now, he's saying, let's have a deduction for health insurance, but let's also look to tax what he called gold-plated employer-provided benefits. What exactly has he got in mind?
All right. Well, Bush is coming at this from the, okay, states are moving. Let's see if we can build on that. And let's keep the emphasis on the states. We know nothing major is going to happen here at the federal level. So there are two parts to the Bush plan. And the first part, as you mentioned, has to do with taxes. And yes, not only Bush, but pretty much everyone across the board agrees that the current tax system doesn't work. It's not a good idea because you have only employer-based health insurance receiving a tax break.
In other words, if I get health benefits from my employer, that's income in a sense for me. I don't pay taxes on it. President Bush is saying, in the future, you will, or at least some of you will. Who?
Well, exactly. So what he's doing is he's saying, okay, basically, you end up with everybody has the same tax deduction. And under the president's proposal, families who buy health insurance, no matter whether it's through an employer or on their own, will not pay income or payroll taxes on the first $15,000 in compensation, and single people wouldn't pay income or payroll taxes on the first $7,500.
That is, of employer-provided health care benefits, and there's a tax deduction for these families then?
Yes, it's a deduction. So there are many people who think it should be a credit because that helps the lower-income people a little bit more. But the whole idea is to, you're sort of taking from the upper end, the wealthiest Americans. And this is the idea. You're taking from the wealthiest Americans. You're limiting the kind of tax break they get so that employers don't offer these unbelievable benefits, these Cadillac plans, while people at the lower end of the income scale, working Americans, are pretty much getting nothing.
How many Americans have health benefits from their employer whose value exceeds $15,000 a year, Marilyn?
Well, I can't give you an exact number, but what I can tell you is that Bush's plan evoked immediate concern from a lot of Democrats who are concerned that not only would this plan hit the wealthiest Americans by limiting their tax break, but that it would also eat into the middle class. And that's the part they're concerned about. In theory, the Democrats also like the idea of paring down the Cadillac plans, you know, making the tax system for healthcare more equitable. But they're very, very concerned about eating into the middle class.
Marilyn, stand by. I want to go to Washington, if I may, and Philip Swagel is joining us there. He's Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy, seen by many as a key architect of the president's announced proposal in the State of the Union speech this week. Philip Swagel, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
How do you like to put it? How do you describe to Americans what's been put on the table by the president here?
I think what we just heard is a good start. The way I look at it is that the current tax system gives a $235 billion subsidy to employer-provided health care. So we spend $235 billion a year to get people in health care, and yet we still have millions and millions of people who aren't insured.
A lot of Americans are awfully happy to have that coverage if they've got it.
Exactly. And so that's one of the key features of the president's proposal, is that there's a tax subsidy now that doesn't really do the job that we want it to, and it doesn't reach many people. And so the president's proposal and other proposals that people have talked about, the credit or other things like that, would take the subsidy and make sure that it reaches more people and reaches people who need it.
So is it in your view, a kind of take from the rich and give to the poor to help them get health coverage?
Well, it's making sure that everyone gets it, whether you get your insurance through your employer or on your own, however you get it. Everyone will get some of the tax subsidy. And one of the key aspects of that is really to take the tax system out of healthcare decisions. Right now we have a tax system that provides a bias for people to buy healthcare insurance. And, obviously it's important that everyone should have insurance, but we shouldn't be pushing people to buy too much or too little.
Are you afraid it may undercut employer-provided health insurance, which for most Americans is the way they get coverage?
That's right. The current system is in the United States is really centered on employer-provided coverage, and we see that system is breaking down. And you ask firms what firms' number one concern is.
Are you encouraging today that breakdown with this move? Are you saying let's hasten, speed the plow here?
No, not at all. The policy is recognizing that they're many people who get coverage through their employers and find that valuable. And I think we fully expect that employers will continue to provide health coverage because employees find that a valuable benefit.
Philip Swagel, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking this hour about the new push for health care reform from state houses to the State of the Union address this week, from Schwarzenegger's plan to Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and now President Bush. You may have heard him in the State of the Union. You may not have heard Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger earlier this month claiming that this time the country is ready to finally fix its medical insurance systems.
In the past, health care reform was always dead on arrival. But this year, I can feel something different in the air. I can feel the energy, the momentum, the desire for action. People really want to get this taken care of. You can feel that the time is right. As a matter of fact, both leaders have said to me that we will get this done. My Republican friends said we will get it done. Ladies and gentlemen, we will get it done.
Arnold of the broken leg says we will get it done. The president's talking about it. What do you think? We've been joined from Washington by Marilyn Werber Serafini with the National Journal. I'm joined right now with me in the studio by Dr. Arnold Relman. He's Emeritus Professor of Medicine and Social Medicine at the Harvard Medical School. His forthcoming book is A Second Opinion, The Impending Collapse of the Healthcare System and How to Prevent It. He's former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. Arnold Relman, thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And with us from Washington, Joseph Antos. He's healthcare and retirement policy expert at the American Enterprise Institute, a commissioner of the Maryland Health Services Cost Review Commission, formerly assistant director for health and human resources at the Congressional Budget Office, author of Private Discounts, Public Subsidies. Joseph Antos, thank you for joining us.
It's good to be here.
Arnold Relman, first to you. We heard the president this week. We heard Philip Swagel, who was very instrumental in designing this new tax sum benefits plan that the president's rolling out, and there's more than that, but that seems to be getting the attention. What do you make of what the president has put on the table here? Is this the way forward, the solution?
I'm afraid it isn't. I think it's all talk and no substance. And despite what the enthusiastic governor of California says,
he can feel the energy.
The president's plan is dead on arrival because most people who understand health care know it's not going to help the basic problem.
Why not? He's saying we're going to take some money from people who have more benefits than they need and shift it to those who have less.
Well, the basic problem is not that people can't afford to buy insurance. The basic problem is that insurance costs too much money, and it costs too much money because health care is too expensive. That's the essential problem. And until you figure out a way to make good health care affordable to everybody, you're wasting your time with all these tax plans.
What about as an interim step? Okay, health care has been expensive for a long time and getting more expensive. We have not fixed that. In the meantime, 47 million don't have insurance. As a kind of a stopgap measure, does this look like something worth pursuing to you?
I'm not sure. I think that I think the California plan, like the Massachusetts plan, is going to go nowhere. Massachusetts plan is coming apart now because it doesn't cover all costs. And I think the disappointment and the frustration that people are going to have may make it even harder to consider the real solution, which is a nationally based plan of insurance.
So universal coverage, national
Absolutely.
Plan.
That's the only logical, sensible way to go. It's inevitable.
There's the battle cry that sort of drove into the sands in the 90s. Could it come back now or should it? Joseph Antos, how do you see President Bush's proposals this week and the initiatives being taken at the State House level?
Bush's proposal doesn't claim to be the ultimate solution to a problem that no one has been able to solve for the last 40 or 50 years. But it is a step, I think, in a reasonable direction. I take his proposal as saying that he's not going to sit on the sidelines when Congress talks about health policy this year. He wants to actively promote reasonable solutions, but I think he would admit, and I think we should all admit, that we don't have the answer. We need to find the answer, and we need a lot of experimentation to do that. That's why the administration supports the states in the efforts that they're taking. I agree with Arnold Relman that things don't look so good for these early plans for lots of reasons. Cost is a big one. And I agree with him also that we need to do something about the basic cost of health care. That's where we need to start.
The basic cost in health care, but there's a fundamental philosophical question here, it seems to me. Arnold Relman says we need national universal coverage. On the other hand, the Wall Street Journal editorial this week says now we're getting somewhere. Let's get government out of this. Let's privatize the whole thing. Joseph Antos, you're at the American Enterprise Institute, conservative outfit. Philip Swagel used to be there. The president comes from a conservative point of view here. Is the president saying, no, let's make it every man and woman for him and herself? Be on your own hook.
Not at all. Let's be realistic. The government's not getting out of health care. The private sector's not getting out of health care. We're in it together. I think what the president is saying that tax policy in particular should be adjusted so that it doesn't influence health decision making, at least as much as it does right now. He's also faced with the same problem that the Democrats have on the Hill. There isn't a lot of money to spend. If we had more money to spend, we could see some expansion of federal programs. But we could also see some expansion of subsidies to individuals to make their own decisions about what kind of health care they really want.
Marilyn, we've seen unions in particular pushing back very strongly on this proposal, saying don't tax these benefits. We fought hard for them. You're going to start eating in to the fundamental path to insurance that most Americans follow, which is their employer covering them. Are opponents of this seeing that historic system at risk here without a new, ship in sight to jump onto?
Well, that's exactly right. And in fact, in the early days, President Bush started talking about his health care plan even a few days before the State of the Union address. And those were the words that kept coming. Those were the most critical words that kept coming was this is the death of the employer-based system. And there are many millions of people who depend on that employer-based system. And they're concerned that if employers begin to drop coverage or to slim their benefits, because if employers are not getting a tax break or only getting a tax break up to a certain point, that employers may start to offer slimmer benefits or get rid of insurance altogether. That leaves people to the individual market, which most people believe does not work very well, especially for sick people.
So it's a long march here. Arnold Relman, how do you see it? Do you see the president's proposal, if adopted, driving employers to cut back on health insurance benefits or drop them entirely? And do you see that as a good or bad thing? Maybe we're on a long march. If that puts a lot of people out in the private system, do you think they'd ultimately start marching in the streets for universal coverage because it's cold out there?
It certainly is cold out there. I think the president's plan is dead on arrival, and I don't think it's worth talking about. It's clearly not going to go anywhere.
Congress won't go
will
this
not,
way because why? Who's going to push
because
back?
Because everybody knows it's not going to deal with the problem. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. And the Mr. Antos, I'm glad that he agrees with many of the things that I said, but he did say one thing that disturbs me. He said that the private sector is part of the solution. It must be, the public and the private sector. But I remind Mr. Antos and I remind the public that the private sector in health care means that they have to make a profit from health care. And they have to, and they have a huge overhead too.
They come right in and scoop what 15%, 20%, 25% off the top of premiums.
15 to 20%, depending on the private plan. There are hundreds of private plans.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are investor-owned private companies. Naturally, they want to make a profit. They've got stockholders, and that profit and their tremendous overhead and business costs come right out of the health care dollar, and we're getting virtually nothing in return.
The president says we get the best health care in the world in return. Tuesday night.
That's nonsense. And anybody who knows anything about American health care, and I think most doctors like me know this, and most health policy experts know it, the American health care system at its technological best is the best in the world.
Mm.
If you're lucky enough to be able to afford the terrific care that our best hospitals and our best specialists give, you get great care. But you have to be able to afford it. And American health care is bad because, unlike any other country, advanced country in the world, we say, in essence, if you can afford it, you can get it.
Was it always this way, this heavy profit motivation in the medical world when you got into the medical business?
No. In my book, I'm old enough and I've been around long enough so that I saw the change occur before my eyes. When I started out in medicine, medicine was about taking care of patients. And every doctor and every hospital knew that if you took good care of patients and you were conscientious, there was enough work to be done, you could make out pretty well. Most doctors didn't expect to get very wealthy, but they expected to make a decent living, and they did.
So what drove the profit motive so high?
Because a number of things happened. One, insurance came in, and insurance said, we'll pay your bill. Medicare and Medicaid said, we'll just pay your bill. And private insurers said, we'll pay your bill, whatever it is. So that encouraged people to go into the healthcare business. And furthermore, technology began to grow, and there were all sorts of expensive tests and expensive drugs and expensive procedures. And just by doing these things, even when they weren't necessary, doctors and hospitals could make a huge amount of money. It was a good business.
And patients are trained to want them, to want
exactly
what's available. A lot of listeners want to come in. Let me just begin to bring them, if I may. Mary's calling from Iowa City, Iowa. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Thanks, and it's good to have you back on in Iowa. You have the news that we here in Iowa need because we're selecting the next president in 08, and the two shows that used to let us talk about things like this, they took them off the air.
Hey, we're right here with you, Mary. What do you think on health care?
Well, the Bush plan is class warfare. It's pitting the middle class against the lower class and the working class. And the $15,000 quote, I think you had Barbara Aaron right on your show.
Yes, earlier this week.
Yes, and she said, I think that's the right person I'm quoting, that that's the amount that a person working at minimum wage, who has a family, you know.
Sure, it's what a lot of people make in a year, so if somebody's getting that just in health benefits or more than that, why not tax it to help out the low income?
When he makes that tax structure about what will be taxed and what will not be taxed. Now, the middle class is very stressed. Because they're making all the sacrifices for the war in Iraq. That upper class, that elite class, has no stake in this except, to control the lower class.
Well, yeah, but the president will put a little touch on them here with his plan when it comes to their benefits. Mary, thanks for calling. Joseph Antos, how about it? Class warfare here or something else?
Something else, definitely. This is not the president saying we want to upset the entire system. He's not saying he wants to dump the employer-sponsored insurance system overboard. He's simply recognizing, as we all should, that employer-sponsored insurance is not a gift from our employer. Every worker who has coverage and where that coverage is partially paid for by the employer is actually paying for it himself. companies don't buy you insurance because they're good guys and you are too. They buy you insurance because you earned that. We have tremendously high premium costs for employer-sponsored insurance. A lot of people would like to turn that into wages or into other other kinds of compensation.
Until they break their leg. Let me go to Carlos in Boston. Hi, Carlos. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I'm an insurance agent, and I'm an employer in Massachusetts. And I think that this new Bush philosophy is just George Bush throwing some lip service at something and trying to deflect from really what he should be doing. What we should be doing is we should be taxing all employers who don't provide their employees with health insurance. I mean, if you're an employer, your responsibility is to keep your workforce in good physical, mental condition, and the only way you're going to do that is by providing a decent benefit like health insurance.
But it is part of compensation in a way. What about people who don't have jobs, who can't get access to that insurance? Why not tax that compensation a little bit to help them out?
Well, because $15,000 is not a realistic threshold. I provide Blue Cross and Blue Shield plan for my employees, and on a family basis, we probably pay $1,100 a month per family. An individual, we probably pay under $400 a month.
$1,100 a month per family? So this doesn't sound gold-plated then. You're talking about families getting very quickly into the realm that they'd be taxed by the president's plan.
I think that $15,000, if George Bush wants to do something, he should lower that to $7,000 or $10,000.
So everybody would pay something, or most people would pay something.
Exactly, because the people that are going to pay are the people who have the big, big, deep pockets. You know, you and I and the common folk out there who have to work really aren't going to be affected at all, and it's not going to help at all. This is just another smokescreen by our president to deflect from all the problems that he's created for himself.
Carlos, thanks for calling. Arnold Roman, smokescreen? I mean, why wouldn't the president want to accomplish something on this?
No, I think the discussion is missing the point here. Where health care is about taking care of sick people. It's not about insurance plans, tax deductions, or price competitive markets. Health care is not and should not be considered a commercial market. And
hey, isn't the horse out of the barn years ago? Our hospitals are privately owned. I mean, it's easy to say, but we're all out here paying premiums, and they're heavy.
Well, we're paying a heavy price for what has happened, but it's not irreversible. In my book, I explain how it can be reversed, and it must be reversed. It seems to me it's not a question of whether we're going to have a universal insurance plan that the nation takes responsibility for, but simply when. It's a question of how bad things are going to have to get before we finally decide that the only thing that makes sense is universal insurance. That's the way health care should be provided.
Joseph Antos, do you see universal coverage as an inevitability or being sidelined by these latest steps?
Well, if it's inevitable, it's probably not inevitable in my lifetime. Dr. Relman says that insurance isn't the issue, and then he says, let's give everybody insurance. I think what we need to do is look at what the real cost drivers are in the system.
We're talking this hour about the new push for health care reform from state houses to the State of the Union address. In a moment, we'll hear from Arnold Schwarzenegger's top advisor on health care in California. I've been joined from the National Journal by Marilyn Werber-Serafini. With me in the studio, Dr. Arnold Relman, Emeritus Professor of Medicine and Social Medicine at the Harvard Medical School. His new book coming out in April, A Second Opinion. Joseph Antos is with us. He is a health care and retirement policy expert at the American Enterprise Institute, author of Private Discounts, Public Subsidies. Senator Barack Obama was talking this morning about health care at the Families USA Health Action Conference in Washington. Obama had critical words for the president's plan proposed in the State of the Union address earlier this week.
Plans that tinker and halfway measures now belong to yesterday. The president's latest proposal that he announced this week has some elements that are interesting, but it basically does little to bring down cost or guarantee coverage. It falls into the category of tinkering and halfway measures.
Christopher is calling from Murphy's Road, Tennessee. Hi, Christopher. You're on the air.
Hi, good to talk to you. I'm glad you guys are talking about this today. You know, my wife is a physician, and I sort of see both sides of this. My problem with all this talk about health care comes down to the talk isn't necessarily about people being healthy. It's about mandating that people have insurance.
Okay.
And if you have a private company insurance that is going to be mandated that people use their services by the government, yet the government isn't necessarily controlling what type of profits. From my wife's perspective, I see how much she pays out and all of her insurance, and only that, you know, when she's on call, she does so many procedures that she doesn't even get paid for. In fact, there's procedures that people need all the time that the insurance only pays a percentage amount that doesn't leave her any profit at all.
But you're saying that the president's saying Americans go get private insurance, and then what your problem with that is the private insurers' profit? Don't they deserve one?
I'm a business person myself. I think that everyone deserves a profit. If you're providing a service, you deserve a profit. My problem is, you know, what are the most wealthy companies on the planet? Are insurance companies. The thing is that they're getting it from both ends.
Mm-hmm.
Their insurance premiums are going up so high, yet they also the insurance that
that they pay out. So out of the consumer side and out of your wife's hide as a doctor.
Yeah.
Christopher, thank you for that perspective. I want to go to California, Sacramento, and Herb Schultz, if we may. He's senior health policy advisor to California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of a couple of advisors who crafted Schwarzenegger's proposed health coverage plan there, a pretty sweeping initiative. Herb Schultz, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Tom.
You hear our caller, Krista, from Tennessee, saying there the private health insurers are the problem. They're digging into the premiums and into the doctors both ways. How's California looking at solving this problem?
Well, thank you very much for the question. Governor Schwarzenegger has outlined and introduced the most comprehensive health plan reform proposal in the nation. What he's proposing to do is, and much of the conversation this morning, I'm glad you're giving us an opportunity to share this information with you, is in California to do what he calls fixing our broken system. And in doing that, we've got 6.5 million people in California uninsured, which is 20% of our population.
How will you take care of them?
So three specific pieces, core elements of the program. One is individual and personal responsibility around focusing on prevention, health promotion, and wellness, really starting at the core to help people, incentivize people to engage in healthier behavior.
How do you do that? Stop, citizen, don't eat that pizza?
No, what you do is you provide incentives, you provide rewards, things like having a health risk appraisal and a follow-up doctor visit where
okay.
you and your doctor talk
mm-hmm.
very specifically about you need to stop smoking. You take a smoking cessation course, you're able to get a lower premium to help your situation.
Got it. And the other two legs of the stool?
The other two legs, coverage for all Californians. And what the governor talks about is shared responsibility, shared benefit. And in the shared responsibility that everybody in the system, individuals, employers, government, health plans and insurers, and providers will share in that responsibility to be able to allow that all Californians will be able to have.
What does that mean? Everybody pays a little more or gives up something? Who pays for those 6 million plus uninsured to get
covered?
What
it means is a variety of people have different responsibilities, if you will, to do that. On the state government perspective, that means $4 billion in an increase in Medi-Cal rates so that we can ensure that our health plans, that our physicians and other providers, and that our hospitals are being paid adequately to be able to take care of our most vulnerable citizens.
And the final piece?
And the final piece is affordability. The governor has talked about in California, we have got to bring the cost of the system down. And how do you do that? One major way is that people who are insured, employers and individuals who are insured in California, pay a hidden tax. They pay a hidden tax that could be up to 17% more on their premiums because right now they are paying for the cost of all of the millions of folks that now are accessing health care through the emergency room and other inappropriate systems, where if we have the ability to cover all folks, we won't be seeing that.
So Herb Schultz, did I read correctly? Are you capping insurance company profits in California? Is it a 15% cap?
The governor has a provision in his proposal that does say that HMOs, health plans, insurers, and hospitals must spend 85% of the premium on patient care.
So it's essentially a cap. What about Arnold Relman, Dr. Relman's position here? He says, look, in the end, states cannot solve this alone. This is all tinkering, sort of like Obama said there. It's ultimately going to have to be a national universal health coverage or it's going to come crashing down. What do you say?
Well, what we say is California is taking the lead as it has now on global warming and on prescription drug discounts for vulnerable citizens. California is taking the lead through the governor's leadership.
So bravo for Schwarzenegger, but will it solve the problem, or is it an interim step?
Well, we believe that this plan will, for Californians, fix our broken system, because the system is, as your folks have said on the phone here, all the other guests, the system is not affordable. It does not allow, because it's not affordable, it allows 6.5 million people in the state to not be
able. So you're big enough, you can solve it on your own, you believe?
Well, I think that the governor's leadership is that we've not seen Washington moving, and we have significant problems in California because of the costs and the skyrocketing costs of health care, and the fact that people are using emergency rooms and not preventing illness, as we know how to do that, but we're not focusing on that. And so the governor wants to move ahead in California to fix our broken system, because we have not seen, obviously, there are proposals and attempts, but at this point, this is a major issue in our state.
Yep, we've got it. Heck of a guy that Arnold, and moving ahead with a great big state, which with all kinds of consequences. Herb Schultz, senior health policy advisor to Arnold Schwarzenegger, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
Tom, can
Marilyn,
I jump in
please.
Here for
yes.
a second
yes.
and raise a question that some of our guests are talking about just on the fringes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the questions here is whose responsibility is this? And if we're talking about the states moving forward here because there's no federal money, the states are also in budget crunches. So we're not talking about a whole lot, if any, of new state money getting put out there also. So the real question is, when we're talking about covering more people, what kind of coverage are we giving them? And in just about every plan that's come out, including the president's plan, the president is talking about basic health care plans. And right now, states have mandates. They tell their insurance companies, if you're going to offer insurance in our state, you have to cover this, this, this. And some of them go quite a ways in doing that. So if we're talking about basic plans, we're talking about, in some cases, what some people are concerned about, bare bones plans.
So you're talking about basic coverage, but maybe that's crummy coverage.
It could that's what a lot of the that's what a lot of folks are concerned about.
Joseph Antos, if we go to the private market with a proposal like the president's, what about it? Do we end up with a lot of bare people covered, but with such bare bones coverage that it's a joke if you really get sick?
It's not going to be a joke. So-called bare bones coverage in a lot of states, as Marilyn says, is covers a lot of things that are of somewhat marginal value for many people who buy that coverage. So I think it's really a question of getting the insurance right. That means reducing some of these state benefit mandates that are really a sop to certain provider groups or certain vendors, rather than getting at fundamental health care needs. Furthermore, the idea that we can't do better, that we can't that perfect is just barely good enough, is what's the problem here. Of course, everybody wants full coverage, meaning I don't have to pay anything with premiums that are largely paid by somebody else.
Well, I don't know. A lot of Americans who have employer help are also paying a pretty good whack on their portion and not complaining so much.
Right, but the tenor of this discussion has been, why don't we just pay for it? Well, we is us. That includes low-income people. It includes high-income people. It includes everybody, and that's really getting at the wrong end of the problem. It's not paying more into the system. It's making the money we spend work better.
Let me take a call from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Amy's on the line. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I would agree with what your last speaker there was saying, but I also want to interject. I'm an attorney, and I work for a legal aid organization, which means that my salary is you know, pretty low for an attorney. My health care benefits package is excellent, and my premium is paid by my employer.
Okay, good for you.
My incentive, I mean, really, one of my biggest incentives for continuing to do the work I do. I love my job, but I already have, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars from putting myself through law school.
So where does that leave you, for example, on the president's plan? Are you worried that you're going to have to start paying taxes on that coverage?
I'm scared to death, yes. If I get, you know, taxed on my gold-plated insurance plan, it's really losing one of the biggest benefits I have of doing the kind of work I do. And I also, as an attorney for legal aid, see many, many people who have had to put, you know, charges on their credit cards and whatnot in order to get the care that they need. So I'm all for some kind of plan that's more equally distributed. Maybe a universal plan would be best. But the president's plan just, you know, leaves me scared to death that I'm going to really lose the biggest benefit I have with the job that I do.
It's an important part of your compensation and scary to imagine life without it or that too heavily taxed. Amy, thanks for calling. Let me get a call from Amherst, New Hampshire, and Karen. Hi, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm going to try to be succinct. My concern with universal care is what it looks like in Germany and Canada and England. We have friends and family who have lived abroad, and the kinds of care that they would get when someone, when a loved one was ill, sometimes it took 6 months to get a surgery that was really required, and the hospitalizations. A neighbor went there to visit her mom in the hospital who was seriously ill, and, you know, there weren't Band-Aids and supplies that are absolutely required in a hospital. So this is clearly a very, very difficult discussion. My husband's working for a well-paid in a company that used to give great, great benefits and have whittled it down to no choices on HMO. We have to take a PPO, and the last 3 years have cost us unbelievably more money to cover our, one of our children has epilepsy, so medications and testing and things, we get hit on all sides of it. But
And here's right where we've been frozen. I mean, you look abroad and maybe north and you don't like what you see, but then we sit at home and the coverage gets whittled down, and it's scary there as well. It's not a comfortable place to remain. Karen, thanks for that, Arnold Rellman. How about it, you know, Americans, many sit right where Karen does here,
yes.
And they have exactly that concern about universal coverage. They'll get it, but how good will it be?
Yes. Well, other countries that have universal coverage spend much, much less on health care than we do, so they get much less. If Canada or the United Kingdom spent as much on health care as we do now, there would not be any waiting lists. There would not be any limitations on care. So what I'm saying is we spent plenty of money on health care.
But I thought
but
we spent
we
too much. That was part of the problem.
No, no.
You want to keep spending that much, just run it through the government?
We spend a lot on health care that doesn't buy good health care. It goes to profits. It goes to overhead. It goes to unnecessary services. If we had an efficient system where there was no incentive to provide more than was necessary and where everybody contributed to the cost fairly according to their income and their wealth with some sort of a universal health care tax. And if, yes, Mr. Antos, of course we need insurance, but it should be universal federal insurance which provides benefits and does not limit the amount of money that can be spent because there's plenty of money in the system. What we need is a better system.
Joseph Antos, are we headed there? Are the politics leaning that way, do you think? Are these interim steps at the states and in George Bush's plan, you know, are we slowly on the road toward universal coverage or not?
Well, I don't see it coming at the federal level. And I think I agree with Dr. Rellman that things don't look really that wonderful for the two big states we've been talking about, Massachusetts and California. It remains to be seen whether their plans are going to work, but I think they're going to be drowned in cost. So it could be that this talk of universal coverage, even at the state level, is a chimera. And we have to go back to, instead of false promises, we have to go back to the hard work. We have to look into what works in medicine, what doesn't work in medicine. We have to look at where physicians are, what their incentives are to provide services. And Dr. Ellman is absolutely right. The current insurance structure which is Medicare, Medicaid, and all private insurance, promotes the kind of wasteful spending that really isn't very helpful and causes people to not have coverage.
Marilyn, we've just got half a minute here. How do you read the politics? Are we headed into a long kind of period of states and everybody putting out piecemeal pieces, or is there in this interest from Schwarzenegger, even from Bush, though it's not in this direction, is there an indication of a political pressure to go towards some more sweeping solution?
All eyes are looking to 2008, the next presidential election. While we are waiting for 2008, members of Congress, especially Democrats, are going to be trying to set the stage by having discussion about what we should be doing, where we should be going, and the states are going to keep moving. And by the way, I just want to make one other point. When we're talking about universal coverage, we could be talking about many different things. Most industrialized nations have federally run systems.
Big grist for another day there. Marilyn Werber-Serafini, we're out of time at the National Journal. Thank you very much for being with us. And Joseph Antos in Washington at AEI as well. Thanks for being here. Arnold Roman, great to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.